This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, this hour is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. We're going to head to Atlanta really for quite a bit of this hour. Jessamyn McIntyre, our own, will join us in 30 minutes, give us some of the flavor of Hotlanta. She's got quite the story to tell about what happened to her yesterday. Ooh, in the meantime, we're going to talk to Doug Gottlieb here in a couple of minutes, CBS College Sports. Of course, played the game of college basketball, and what? What are you shaking
Fox?
Your head at?
He's a Fox now.
He is?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
it's running the show, dude.
Hey, Kyle.
Fox
what's going on
Radio
here? Fox?
National, baby.
All right.
Calling games. I think he still does probably some tournament
Don't
stuff.
Don't pull a Goodell
CBS.
Move and yeah. then like yeah. shirk off responsibility. Yeah, this is on you.
I used
right?
to fill in for Doug Gottlieb every day. I haven't heard him in years now. I've got to be honest.
Yeah, it works for Fox, Pac 12, and CBS.
Yeah, he does it all.
So he works for CBS, so that's not entirely wrong. No?
Yeah, he's a little.
Should I worm my way out of it? All right, he's going to join us here in about 2 minutes. Going to ask him, of course, about Atlanta, because Doug's a good opinionist. He's got opinions on everything under the sun, which is why I love him. But I want to talk a little bit about the Huskies, man. How many more wins do they need to put up before they're back in the top 25? Do you think they'll get there this week?
Well, they were close. So the net rankings, I believe they were like 32 coming into USC and UCLA. USC was 5-2. USC had beaten Arizona. You know, it was... And obviously, they're out of conference, and they're 12-9, so it's not as if, oh my gosh, they're quadrant one or anything like that. There were also others receiving votes. They were just outside the top 25. I think if you beat UCLA this weekend, you may find yourself inching into the bottom of that top 25. And anytime you do something in league, like, and you heard Lavin say that, and Kevin O'Neill was on with Danny David Moore and those guys, anytime you start to do something, even in a bad league, where you're 9-0, you know, which a win over UCLA Saturday, and you've won your last 11. And then actually you dig a little deeper and you realize, and good for them, unlike the Huskies who lost to Auburn, and then Auburn went the rest of the way.
Right.
The teams the Huskies lost to,
well, still good.
Gonzaga's top five, right. Auburn's top 15, top 12, Virginia Tech is top 12. I mean, you lost, and you know, with Gonzaga, you played down to the wire. And obviously the other one that's a bummer is Minnesota, that I actually watched. Most people didn't because it was in Vancouver. And they got robbed. There was a traveling on the Minnesota kid before the game winner. Should have won that game. Unfortunately, was not called. Lost by, you know, with the three-pointer in the final shot. But, yeah, I think they'll find, a long-winded answer to your question, I think they'll find themselves probably at the bottom of the top 25 with the win over UCLA Saturday. And I don't think those guys could care less about it. They want to just continue to keep.
Well, they're
going
to have to care about
ball.
It at the end of the year. I mean, look, the only way that they can totally control their own destiny is by winning the Pac-12 tournament. And that always just leaves things to chance, right? I mean, if you want to have the opportunity to give yourself a little margin for error, then yes, those rankings do count.
Or go like 16-2 in conference or 15-3. But yes, so a win over UCLA puts them at 9-0. And I was listening to a bunch of national folks.
Do they need somebody else in the conference to also dominate?
Well, that's probably a good and better question.
Do they need Doug? Do they need Arizona or whatever?
You wanted ASU. ASU beat Kansas. You want ASU. ASU's got some quadrant one
right.
wins. You want them to be number two on this list.
And
so,
you've got to beat them and
yes,
have them
and,
be good.
And you go to Arizona and Arizona State next weekend. So that, like, if you want to try to find, as they put their resumes up, where can I get a quadrant one win? I think the only possibility in all of conference would be at ASU. I don't think that there's not another game with where these teams are right now that are going to get you to improve your ranking, to improve your net ranking. The only one would be ASU. So, yes, I think you would like to see ASU or, you know, Arizona, some bad losses last week. I mean, I think ASU is probably about the only other contender. You know, that you'd like to see win to try to up your resume just a little bit.
Well, we'll see if they're able to get that done. They play ASU, what, Saturday?
Next
Saturday, the 9th at Arizona State. So that'll be sort of the next big test. But look, I mean, anytime you play a team in conference, especially right now when you're the hunted, they're going to give you their best, right?
No question about that.
And look, USC didn't go away last night. They were being threatened early to just get boat raced right out of there, and they continued to battle and scrap, and they stayed in it. And they're sort of a sloppy, ugly
they were
team.
They were Washington the last 5 years.
Which is exactly what they wanted when they hired Andy Enfield, right? They wanted sort of a loosey-goosey style. That's what they got.
Just get up and down, just bring in a bunch of athletes that can fly and jump out of the gym and, a bunch of pieces. And we've watched that for the last 4 or 5 years. Undisciplined
and they came
play.
Back, and they made, but how many turnovers? And a huge credit to the Huskies for doing what they had to last night. All right, Doug Gottlieb joins us now from Atlanta. He joins us on the Venue Kings Hotline. Good morning, Doug. How are you, man?
Good. Isn't it amazing, like, the same kids that get their previous coach fired get this guy... Get hopped, put up on a pedestal.
Well, they've been awesome for him. I mean, there are a few guys on this team, and Noah Dickerson is probably the best example. I mean, if you watched him closely as a freshman under Romar, he was a tough watch, man. He looked like he didn't really belong in the game, and you watch him under Hopkins, and he seems to have, A, developed, and B, really know himself. He's awesome to watch now.
Yeah, it's how it's supposed to be. Like, you come in, you don't know what the hell you're doing, and you're a little bit lost, and you get better, and you get better, and you get better, and, you know, you earn minutes, and... I mean, like, look, that was the whole thing with Roe was they just had too much turnover. And you know, look, the league's not great, maybe not even good. But that doesn't take away from this Husky story at all. To be 8-0, dominating the league, show the ability to go on the road and win at Oregon State last week, you know, beat USC, and do so where you're basically leading the whole way. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the number one thing, though, is that if you can retain your players, you give yourself a better chance. It's not just men competing against boys, but it's also cohesion. And, you know, you take a look at USC, and they lose their four-year starter point guard, lose Metu. They do have Boatwright and Rakosevich back, and Matthews is back, but you lose your point guard. And then, you know, you bring in Kevin Porter, and he's in the lineup, he's out of the lineup. I did their game last week, and they beat the hell out of Arizona, but he didn't know where he was supposed to be half the time. And you only get that over time. So I think it's going to be interesting in the future with Washington, considering how well they're recruiting going forward to next year. But again, you're going to be back in that cycle of potential, you know, one and two and done.
You know, last night on the game, Doug Gottlieb with us, Steve Lavin was on the call. And Steve Lavin was saying things about Jalen Noel that I just flat out couldn't believe. I think Jalen's a phenomenal player. But Steve Lavin, on the broadcast a couple different times, Doug, last night said that he is the best guard in college basketball. And repeated himself a couple times. So this is the best guard right now in college basketball. Do you put him anywhere close to that level?
No, but I think he's good. I mean, he's a really high turnover guy. Didn't he have like seven last night?
He will turn it over a little bit. Yep, but he'll jump out of the gym. Yeah, he'll rebound. He'll assist. He'll block. I think he had also like seven boards, five blocks.
If he would have said, hey, I'm not sure there's anyone who does as much as Jalen Noel. I would have gone like, okay, I'm good with that.
Yep.
But the he's the best guard in college basketball. It's a lot. I mean, he's not taking a ton of threes, but he's shooting like at a 45% clip, which is obscene. Because he's a good shooter, but he's such a good athlete that usually, I think he picks his spots well. But look, his shot selection has improved. That's why his numbers have improved. Obviously, he's making more. He's still a high turnover guy, but it's not like he's selfish. You know, he's averaging 3.5 assists a game, and he fits into what they want to do. He was really, really good at getting the line against Oregon State.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a key. You know, my brother's there, and I had the scout report actually in my hand. And I mean, he was their number one guy in terms of matchup wise. I do think calling him the best, that's a little bit much, but I mean, you look at the best teams that they've played, you know, think about what he did against Gonzaga. Think about what he did early on against Minnesota. Think about, I thought he played pretty well, although had a bunch of turnovers against Auburn early in the year. You know, Jalen's an incredibly important cog, and he does maybe more than most guards in college basketball. But I would struggle with he's the best guard in college basketball just because there's a good I'm actually putting together my list. We have each position in college basketball now has an award, and I'm putting together my top 10 finalists. And so I have him on scoring guards, but there's a good list of points and twos that are on that list.
How good is Hopkins? I texted you the other day and said, man, because Doug, what I've watched is everything that, you know, you said Roe unfortunately wasn't the last 5 or 6 years of developing players, keeping players, growing players, having a consistent conviction about what you are. How good is Mike Hopkins, and how many jobs did he turn down over a couple decades at Syracuse?
Wait, how many jobs? What was the last part?
Yeah, how many jobs do you think he turned down over the couple decades that he was on that bench at Syracuse? How many opportunities before he said, you know what?
Honestly, not many. No, I mean, it's one of those. And, you know, when they made the coaching change, there was no real, they didn't really go through a national search. You know, she wanted Mike Hopkins. That was the guy she had identified. And And I think she called him in and said, "Hey, you know, what's your plan?" And he had a really good plan in terms of putting a staff together. You know, because that's a good portion of what's made Hop. I also think one of the things that's made Hop really good is that they didn't win when he was interim coach at Syracuse. So it kind of leveled him off and allowed him. It was almost like having a first coaching job that didn't go well, only it really didn't hurt him. You know, but look, he's got Cameron Dollar as a former head coach. He's got Dave Rice as a former head coach. He's got Will that gives you continuity and gives you connections with the locals. And he's really good with player development. You know, he's got a really, really good staff. And I think that's a big portion of it. And I think he understands that from being on a staff for a long time. And then, you know, good. Look, he has the benefit of bringing everybody back in a league that lost essentially everything. And then, you know, the other secret to it is everyone knows that if UW gets it going, Heck Ed is a really tough place to play. And you should win 90-95% of your games. So I think the whole thing works. I've known Hop. He played for my dad. Let's see here. He was in a junior in high school. He started playing for my dad, maybe a sophomore. So, you know, we're talking almost 35 years I've known Hop. And he has, like Brock, you have this, like, you know, that quarterback thing where you walk in, you're like, I don't know why, but I feel like I've known him forever. Like, the quarterbacks have that. The really good young coaches have it. And Hop has that. Black kids, white kids, doesn't matter. He just, everybody likes Hop. So I think it's a combination of things. But I also think, like, let's not undersell it's a good staff. Let's not undersell the fact they have everybody back, and let's, you know, in comparison to the league, and let's not undersell the fact that he got a little bit of experience and probably a little bit of failure at Syracuse. But, like, he couldn't get the Oregon State job. People forget that. And my brother thought he was crazy. My brother was a Cal at the time for wanting the Oregon State job. But, you know, he wanted a good head coaching job, a good opportunity, and obviously UW's a great one, and he's making it work.
Hey, Doug, what is going on with this conference? You know, Brock brought up something earlier about how football registration is down across the West Coast, and that may end up affecting the Pac-12, certainly in its ability to be relevant in football. But that shouldn't be a problem in basketball. How has this conference deteriorated in hoops the way it has?
I'm not a believer in one factor. Like, I'm not going to blame the freaking commissioner of the Pac-12. I think that's lame. I do think that what Brock's getting into is probably the biggest reason that Pac-12 schools don't have the defensive lines, you know, the defensive lines, especially that they have in the SEC, is that, you know, like my kid's in Southern California and everybody says play flag until high school. And who knows if high school football even survives. So you're going to have a ton of skill position guys, but getting the linebackers and the DB and the defensive linemen, the offensive linemen, like, you know, where do you recruit from, right? Seattle and of course, you know, Northern California, Southern California, Vegas. Like, those are kind of fit cities. It's kind of hard to get, you know, parents of 6'4", 6'5", kids say, no, make your kid 350 pounds and put them on the offensive line, right? For basketball, I think it's a couple things. First is, you got to recruit L.A., with the exception of UW, and even UW, you got to recruit L.A. And L.A. kids can be tricky. It just can be tricky. You know, everybody has an angle on something. And you get Mike Montgomery, who my brother coached with at Cal, used to say, like, all right, we signed what, two kids from L.A.? That's it. No more. That's our limit. Just because, you know, too many L.A. kids, it's kind of hard. There's conflicting alliances, and every kid thinks he's a pro. So I think the L.A. thing's part of it. I think it's also just a bad window. Arizona, you know, would have been really good, but had to blow it up because of, you know, the ESPN article last year. Cal has been an abject disaster because of recent coaching hires. Stanford is the most disappointing program, I think, in the country, considering what they used to be and the fact that you should be able to win with smart kids that stay 4 years now. Mm-hmm. You know, Washington was talented but down, but mostly because, you know, Seattle basketball was a little bit down, but they couldn't keep the good kids home at the end of the Romar thing. And then the kids they did keep home kept leaving early, you know, for the draft. So I think, you know, Arizona State and USC, they've always been these programs that up, down, some pros, you know, teams that kind of overachieve and then underachieve. That's normal. What's not normal is Cal, UCLA, Stanford, and UW, like all, and Arizona, but especially Arizona and UCLA, all collectively going through a down year. But if UCLA makes the right hire, they'll be fine. It'll probably take another year. Arizona's got top recruiting class in the country. UW now is getting, you know, top five recruiting class in the country. And then we'll see what I'm sure Cal will make a change. That thing is just such a mess. But if they make a change and they get kids to stay home in Oakland, they'll be fine. So anybody predicting long-term gloom and doom, I don't think that's the case. But it's just there's some tricky jobs. And, you know, you got a bunch of guys that haven't built the continuity. New coaches or coaches that don't have the support of the university.
Doug Gottlieb here with us. We'll switch gears quickly, Doug, and let you get back to your work down there in Atlanta. You enjoy being down there at the Super Bowl, at the side of the Super Bowl, and doing your show?
Yeah, I mean, for a national radio show, it's great. Because, you know, like today we have on Dan Marino, Saquon Barkley, Kyler Murray, Stephon Diggs, George Kittle, you know, Vinatieri, Kelsey, Travis Kelsey, Greg Olson, right? So for that stuff, it's good. I mean, Atlanta wouldn't be the one I would pick. You know, like if I have a pick of 32 NFL cities, it wouldn't be last, but it wouldn't be in the top 20. Ooh, that's actually a good radio segment.
That's not bad. Yeah, you just thought about that.
I think I know what's coming up later on the Doug Gottlieb show.
How many times did Salk fill in for you, by the way? How many did you ever count?
How many,
how many times did Salk fill in for you? Remember that back in the day?
The old place?
Yeah. Hundreds?
It was one-third of 1 year. I looked it up. It was one-third of the year.
Really?
It was. I did a third of the Doug Gottlieb shows 1 year.
Really? I had no idea I was off that.
Well, you weren't always off. A lot of times you were filling in for Mike and Mike or for Colin or something like that. So you weren't necessarily off a third of the days, and a lot of days you were doing college hoops or whatever. But I did one-third of the Doug Gottlieb shows over the course of a year.
I mean, you feel like you groomed him.
Really?
Yeah, you feel some ownership, like you kind of groomed him and you developed him, you gave him opportunity, you let
responsibility,
him fly.
More like it.
Brock, honest question. Tony called out, what would he call out, like 10 of the 13 plays? How many could you have gotten?
What plays were those?
End
of fourth quarter.
End of the game, yeah.
That's what it's like to watch football with Tim Hasselbeck.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, these coverages where the ball's going.
Yeah,
Brock probably won, maybe
you
two.
Get a pretty good feel. You know what's interesting about that, though, Doug? You know what's interesting is how many Kansas City plays did he call out? That would be zero.
None.
Why?
You know what?
Why? I wonder why. I wonder if there's some connections that he's got at times, you know, and rightfully so, which is awesome for him, that give him a little bit of an alert every once in a while as he's up there. It's just kind of fascinating that the Kansas City or some of these that he may not, he has zero feel for. And other times, he's got incredible feel.
Here's what's interesting to me. I got to do sideline for the NFL this year.
Yeah.
On Fox. And I did Bears against the Dolphins. And the Dolphins guys are like, you know, this is the Kansas City offense. You know, Trubisky obviously isn't Mahomes at all,
right,
especially accuracy.
Right.
But he's like, look, they kind of only run five or six things. They just, it's all kind of smoke and mirrors and take you over here,
yep,
the shift over there,
right,
motion over here. And he's like, you know, it's once you just stick to your keys, you kind of know what you got to figure out what play is coming. You know, they run belly like everybody else,
mm-hmm,
but they run it out of different sets. They trying to kind of get you, you know, chasing a mouse and, you know, chasing Tyreek Hill. I think that's interesting and something Tony didn't kind of point out.
Yeah.
So you're right. Whereas it also probably would have been easier to tell you what's coming with Kansas City, because Kansas City is so much pre-snap.
Yeah.
To be fair, though, Doug, you got to understand, Brock's very jealous of Tony Romo. There's been a lot of bitterness. There has.
No, because I'll listen to Doug
Gottlieb.
There's a lot of bitterness. Hold on. I'll listen to Doug Gottlieb do a basketball game. Or last night, or 2 nights ago, I was listening to our buddy Dan Dockich, and he's calling out things like, oh, they're going to run the weave, and then they're going to kick it to the corner. Like, you see these things.
I've heard you do games. If you do the prep, it's right there in front of you.
Sure.
It really is,
yes.
You know, and it's like, yep, if you go, like, I don't know if you can pull this up, Brock, but go pull I did Marquette Xavier.
Yep.
And after timeouts on sideline plays, like, I can tell you exactly what's coming for Marquette.
Yep.
You know, they're like, they're going to use Marcus Howard.
Doug, you're doing this years before Romo ever did, all right?
No. But
true.
I find it interesting that I think it's where broadcasting has evolved.
Yeah.
Because if you go back and watch, you know, we go back and watch the legends of the 1990s, you know, they didn't really tell you.
No.
It was all kind of in, like,
after the fact,
this guy needs to step up.
Right.
They're more what I would call commentators.
Yep.
And I always thought of you, Brock, as you're like, I like to think of myself the same, as like an analyst.
Yeah.
An analyst tells you why something happened and maybe taught you a little bit about it. And I think that's what Tony has brought kind of to the forefront.
Yep.
And look, I would credit Nance with kind of really buying into
yeah,
it.
Cause, no question.
Because there's some mistakes Tony makes, but he gets covered up because Nance is so good.
Well, and it's the opposite of what they had on that same broadcast for years. And I love Phil Sims, one of my favorite guests. He's one of my favorite quarterbacks. But Phil's a
folksy.
He's a fun guy to hang out with and watch the game. He's not giving you that level of analysis, right? It's the exact opposite of that.
Yep. Yep.
Love it, Doug. Well, have a great time down there in Hot
Atlanta. I
was going to ask you about Goodell. I wanted to ask you about Goodell, whether you went to the Goodell thing yesterday.
I did.
What'd you think?
What's he supposed to do? Like, people act like, well, he didn't say anything after the game. It's not his job. Al Riveron picked up the phone. Think about this. Here's what people are thinking. Have you ever in your life heard of a league or a head of officials calling the coach immediately after the game and saying, hey, you know what, we blew that call? You ever heard that?
Nope.
Like, I thought they were actually more accountable than any league has ever been. Mm-hmm. I'm not in the bag for Goodell. That's not his job. And if he had overstepped his bounds and, if he apologizes publicly, that doesn't change it, right? That just makes people more pissed because they saw some rule that makes them think he can change the game, you know? And if you work for Goodell and you're like, look, I put Al Riveron ahead of officiating, like, that's what he gets paid for. He gets paid to take bullets.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, had they simply taken a knee on three plays and kicked the field goal, the Rams would have had 50 seconds left with a chance to tie, you know, or not throw an interception in overtime. So I don't have nearly as much sympathy for the Saints as other people do.
Doug, it's always good to catch up with you, man. Always good to get your opinions, not only on college hoops, but on everything. Thank you. It's always good to talk to you. We'll do it again.
Okay, fellas. See you.
All right.
Thanks,
there
Doug.
There's Doug Gottlieb spending a good time with us. And Doug does not lack for opinions on everything.
That's why he's a national host.
He really, I mean, Doug's great. He's really opinionated, but he also really understands not only the game of basketball, but the world of college basketball.
Yes.
That's always the thing I love about Doug. Is he
he's
really,
right on the fringe. He wants to coach. You
he
can
does.
Hear it. He wanted that Oklahoma State job.
But like, he understands
he wants
the
to get in the mix.
He knows what it is that makes Hop effective, not just the X's and O's,
yep.
but the world, the sort of shadowy world of college basketball.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I thought the insight there about how you can only have two L.A. kids on one team is interesting. And, you know, he's right about L.A. in general. Everybody in L.A. has an angle on something. Mm-hmm. I certainly don't know the college or the high school basketball world or the AAU world there that leads to the college world. But he's right. I mean, that's L.A. Everybody's got an angle and everybody thinks they're going to be a pro and everyone's going to be a millionaire and this and that. And I can absolutely it doesn't take like a large leap of faith to understand how that might affect teams.
No,
right.
And I love his little comment. He snuck in there. And I don't know if everybody heard it. But he's like, you know, out west, you've got like Seattle, L.A., Vegas. You know, people are fit.
They're fit cities.
Like, they're fit cities.
Yes.
You got a little coward to them, right? They're little fit cities versus, you know, where you're not going to get.
Little coward.
Where you don't.
He's
where,
got
where
a lot
you don't
of coward.
Celebrate 350-pounders.
A
where,
lot
whereas
of coward.
Down south, it's a, not quite as fit.
He's got a lot of coward.
Yes, they
not
do.
Not just a little. Yep. He's got a lot.
He got a little.
He's got a lot. All right. Great job by Doug Gottlieb. Always good to catch up with him. We'll have some good news, bad news, no news. Brock's going to dig deeper into three subjects at 9 o'clock. Before we do it, though, we're going to go back to Atlanta, get a little bit of the scene from our own next on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Sour is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. We're going to head back to Atlanta in just a minute, catch up with our own Jessamyn McIntyre, who was there reporting and doing her thing. She had kind of a tough day yesterday.
Awful.
You ever heard of fired up Jessamyn?
Yeah.
It's great when it's not at you.
Correct.
Like, when it's at you, it's not fun at all.
That intensity is not fun.
But when you get Jess's, like, the anger of Jess, but it's not directed at you,
phenomenal.
It is a thing to behold.
Knock
it's
down
awesome.
Walls.
So,
no
yeah,
question
so we'll talk
about.
To her coming up here in just a sec. Oh, we have her? Oh, good. Hi, Jess. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good morning. It is getting a little rowdy down here at the media center. I'll tell you what.
Why? Are people fighting?
Famous people everywhere. Nah, oh. Just a lot of people more popular and famous than I am.
Who's around? Who are you watching? Who do you have eyes on?
Well, I can see Michael Irvin right there. Our own Kenny Mayne is to my right.
Oh, nice.
So I've got him over here. Bill Romanowski tends to be the belle of the ball each time because it comes for the full week, and so he's right over there. Yesterday it was Saquon Barkley. We got these guys all over the place. And, you know, the bigger the personality, the better the entourage.
Right.
And I did walk by Herschel Walker, and I was running so fast, I think he thought I was someone else and stopped to say hi. And I just shook his hand and kept coming down so I could do this radio hit. So,
nice.
Yeah, but that was pretty cool, too. And I'm sure we'll see plenty of personalities throughout the rest of the week. Oh, Brian Urlacher's right next to us, too.
Wow, look at that. Who's who? Who would know down at the Super Bowl? So, Jess, what happened?
Yeah, right?
What happened yesterday? Did we get our wallet back? What happened?
You know what? Sometimes you just have to chalk up a casualty to the road, and it just so happened to be my wallet. But the best thing that happened was I had my credit card in my back pocket, and I have a very good friend overnighting my passport to me. So,
so you are going to get home.
I'm going to get home just fine, and some of the things you have to just chalk it up to, it could have been so much worse.
Level of anger when you realized your wallet was gone?
There was confusion. It started with confusion. What are there, 5 to 7 stages that you deal with
yes.
these things? Denial was at first, it must just be at the hotel where I was, and then the fraud activity shows up. So, I would say just make sure you have fraud protection because those people were on it and they actually told me that I was probably being cased out considering the swiftness that Sam's Club got a $1,600 charge.
Whoa.
So,
crazy.
Yeah, but you know what? It's all good.
Good. All right. Well, tell me about this Super Bowl compared to some of the others because this is not your first rodeo. You've been to a few of these. What has been the vibe of this Atlanta Super Bowl versus some of the others? How has it stood out?
I'd say our setup is really good. I think there's a lot of hype around Atlanta as a town because it's been so long since they've hosted one that there's a lot of excitement. The city's doing a really good job. The Super Bowl host committee has really stepped up their efforts when it comes to just making sure everyone's safe, having a good time. There is a ton of security here. I mean, not where I was having a drink last night, but that's besides the point. I do think that they're doing an excellent job here, and the Radio Row setup is similar to it was in Arizona, except it's more accessible, if that makes sense. We have a lot of space, but it's easier to get around.
Do you feel like, Jess, you ever have the opportunity to say to John Clayton, when Evander Holyfield invites you and Maura to a steak dinner, you need to go?
That was an Amora executive decision to maybe go or not go to a steak dinner.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that it's something that I would have a say in, but it wasn't necessarily a full out. We thought it was an open invitation. We do have Maura on the line. If you want to ask her about
it. I want to talk to Maura. Absolutely. Yes. So John told us this morning, if I understood the story correctly, that you guys were invited to an Evander Holyfield steak dinner.
No, Evander Holyfield.
Excuse me.
Thank you. Get it right.
All right. That you were invited to his steak dinner. And John didn't think it was going to be much, so he ended up turning it down. And it turns out there were only 25 people. It would have been a small elite gathering with the champ. Maura, will you ever forgive him?
And I also feel like he made it seem like I told him about it earlier before we went to the Super Bowl, and he was like, oh, yeah, I don't know if I'll have time. And then he brought it up yesterday almost like I dropped the ball by not letting him know, and I was like, I told you. So I think Evander Holyfield is not mad at me.
Oh, no. That's the last thing you want.
And we're going to see him later.
Well, you don't want to. He's the champ. You don't want him mad at you. That's a disaster.
He thinks I didn't let John know about the dinner.
Your favorite interview this week so far? And I know it's Thursday. We got another set of interviews today and tomorrow as well. But your favorite interview of the week thus far?
I think it might have to be Michael Irvin, which he was running late yesterday, so we recorded, so everyone will get to hear it later today at 11:15, but he's pretty awesome.
Good. Well, Michael Irvin, obviously one of the best. Hey, guys, for both of you, thank you. It's good to catch up with you both, hear a little bit about what it's like down there in Atlanta. We miss you guys, and we'll see you next week. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jess. Thanks,
there's Jess. There's Maura Dooley, who is John Clayton's producer, and you hear her voice, of course, from 10 to noon throughout the John Clayton Show.
We were down in Atlanta for the Peach Bowl the year before the national title game was played down in Atlanta. I will say this. I'll disagree with Doug just a little bit. I don't think it's outside the 20 NFL cities for an event. Mm. Everything is, I'm not saying it's like the beauty or the weather or anything, but as far as being able to walk to everything, the hotels are all walking distance. There's lots of food.
It's okay.
The events, the stages, everything is right there.
So Doug said that was a segment. All right. So if you start looking at the NFL host cities, if you wanted to start putting together where you would like to be for a major event like the Super Bowl, you don't think that Atlanta's, he said, not in the top 20. You think that Atlanta cracks the top 20?
Awful.
Were you there for that?
Yes.
I heard Jacksonville and Houston are the two everybody hated.
Houston,
right?
Was awful. So Phoenix was
purely
awful.
This is purely based on the city and the culture, right? This isn't based on the stadium or anything.
I think it's everything. Okay. I think it's the whole everything. Like who, you know. What,
I will say this. New York will be impossible to top. New York was absolutely phenomenal. The weather held for us that week, and it was still cold.
Where was Radio Row there?
Oh, where was it? It was.
You were in Manhattan?
Yeah.
Because the game was obviously in New Jersey.
But you were in Manhattan for all the activity.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That was,
I mean, Buffalo would phenomenal. Be the worst. You couldn't do worse than Buffalo, right?
The random one that people love is Indianapolis.
Detroit was horrible.
Yeah, I guess Detroit would
Jacksonville
be
Jacksonville was horrible.
At least Buffalo's close to Toronto. Maybe they could do it in Toronto, but just have the game in Buffalo. Ugh. But Buffalo and Detroit are probably going to be the 1-2, and maybe Cincinnati would be like
there's
the
a
Cleveland.
Lot of bad.
All right, there's
there
a bunch
lot
of bad
of
ones.
Bad, bad, bad.
Yeah, all right. So you can't do it in Buffalo. You can't do it in Cincinnati. You can't do it in Cleveland. You can't do it again in Detroit. That's four.
Miami.
It would be
phenomenal.
Unfortunately impossible, I think, to do it in Green Bay. They just don't have the infrastructure in that area.
Gotta have
the Super
hotel
Bowl,
rooms.
Right?
It's all we ever hear about.
All right,
in
so that so they can't do Green Bay is just out. So that's five right off the bat that just are going to be unfortunately incapable of this. I'm looking through the rest, and almost everywhere else, at least as a possibility. I don't know if it would work.
Oakland, San Francisco.
I'll just run through the teams. Miami obviously works great, right? Yes. They had the rain the one year, yes. But other than that, Miami's a really good venue for
New Orleans is phenomenal.
New England? I don't know how you could do it.
No.
I mean, Foxborough's in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you could do all the stuff in Boston,
no
but there's
way.
Just nothing near
no
Foxborough.
Way.
That would be a disaster.
No chance.
The Jets, all right, so you've done New York. Mm-hmm. And the Cowboys? They're going to have it, what, next year, a couple of years? So we'll see how that works. I'm sure
they've
done
a ton of games there.
That'll
Jerry's World is phenomenal.
It works for a big
a lot of hotels. Great.
All right, did the Giants, the Philadelphia? I mean, it's so cold, but why couldn't you do it in Philly?
The Link, man?
I don't know. They've done like
yeah, they upgraded those
and stuff.
Upgrade, yeah.
I think you could do it in Philadelphia. I think that'd be actually kind of cool.
Stadium District isn't great. Done a bunch of games there.
How about Washington? I think would actually be a terrible place.
Yes.
I think just unfortunately with the way DC operates and that town and the
traffic,
I think
no
it would
chance.
Be a terrible, terrible destination. Baltimore even worse. Cincinnati's out.
See,
Cleveland's out.
So
what about Kansas City? Did we already touch on that?
We haven't gotten there yet. Pittsburgh? Could you do it in Pittsburgh? I don't think so. Such a small town. I don't know,
too
maybe.
Many bridges.
Way too many.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Not enough. Too many tunnels. Chicago, I'll tell you, if it's going to be weather like this, it'd be impossible. But Chicago would be a cool place for a Super Bowl.
Yes.
I think Chicago would be a really cool
place.
Okay,
better to bring this home a little bit. Where would Seattle fit into this?
I mean, I think better than a bunch of these teams.
Better
you want
than
to go
the
better
majority
or
of these. It'd be in the top
Minnesota
half.
Just did it, and they did it pretty well, from what I understand. Houston was a terrible location.
Terrible.
Because it's so spread out.
Yep.
So Seattle would be better than that.
Seattle would be top half,
now,
no
everybody
question
liked Indy. Everybody liked
Indy,
which is weird.
That's the reason they keep taking the combine there every year.
It's downtown.
Located.
You can get a lot of direct flights to Indy,
Jacksonville,
too.
Awful. How about Tennessee? How come they haven't done this in Nashville? It seems like the Super
Nashville
Bowl should go to
Nashville.
Nashville
would not be a great place
really?
For this. I don't think. It's kind of, in some ways, it's turned into sort of like a Las Vegas on the East
Coast.
Yeah,
I mean, it's got all the hotels. Don't
so
you think you could do like a Radio Row?
It's extremely expensive for travel.
Very
it's
expensive.
Not that easy to navigate around the actual city. Their traffic is on our par or LA's level of
terrible. But you
terrible.
Got the Grand Ole Opry. Don't you think you could do like
history,
a whole media
sure.
row at the, what's the huge hotel there? The
Omni?
The Grand Ole Opry. What the heck's the thing right now? Opryland. The Opryland
there
Hotel.
Yes.
The Gaylord's Opryland would be pretty cool.
I think the point is Seattle would be a top half. Maybe
Absolutely.
Even a top 10.
What a joke. Get the Super Bowl in Seattle. Come on. What are we waiting for?
Better weather.
Better weather? They're having a deep freeze in Atlanta.
True.
It's beautiful here.
True.
Did you not see the sunset last
Everyone
night?
Everyone around the Gorgeous. Country would be excited to come here.
Can
They'd be
you
like,
imagine?
Wow, 50 degrees? That sounds amazing.
If we had had that sunset last night with the entire national media here, how awesome that would have been. Oh, somebody's got to get on this and make it happen. Good news, bad news, no news coming up next. Brock and Salk.
Good news.
Yeah!
Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
All right, Brock likes to dig deeper. Three topics, and we get deep inside them, Brock. You really want to go as deep as you can.
Possibly.
How deep can you go?
You're making it sound kind of weird.
I am?
I think so.
Well, it's your phrasey. It's your phraseology. I'm just using what you wrote here.
Dig deeper.
All right, Brock wants to dig deeper.
Husky men's basketball team beat USC last night 75-62. They remain undefeated in conference play.
Yeah, USC came at them. Boatwright scored 20. Kind of a tough matchup, actually.
He's always been good.
Yeah, I think if you just look at a couple guys, and their big guys can pass, they can shoot. They did a nice job. Both those guys, a double-double for their five, and Boatwright had over 20. And, you know, USC, just as we anticipated, was going to give UW their very best shot. UW withstood it. USC made some runs, and ultimately, just the veterans outclassed them. I'll tell you this. It's amazing to watch. Like, we played basketball at Dory's house a couple weekends ago, the title weekend. If the five of us went and played, exhausted. Like, you just go up and down the court a couple times. You're just exhausted. Matisse Thybulle doesn't even sweat. I mean, another, like, five steals, a couple amazing dunks. He makes it look so easy. He does not even perspire, that man. Good news for the Huskies now, 8-0
in conference. I'm perspiring right now. I'm not even playing basketball. Obviously, that's good news. Look, the Huskies do a lot of dumb stuff. They do. They turn the ball over too much, and on offense, they can do some dumb stuff. But they're really fun to watch. They hustle on D. They get their hands in all the passing lanes. They rely on their best players who mostly know what their roles are. And while they get sloppy on offense, I think they put their opponents on the defensive.
Oh, no question.
Their opponents are constantly uncomfortable. And I think that's why they're dominating this conference. USC always looked uncomfortable last night. Yeah, they scored some points, and they're going to take advantage of flaws at times, and the Huskies turn it over, and that was a problem. They don't always capitalize all that well on the turnovers that they cause.
I don't know how much AAU ball you watch, but if you did, you don't see them shooting short corner shots or elbow shots.
I don't watch any.
No, they love to just run and dunk and shoot threes. Well, that's what their scheme takes away, and it makes guys, you're right, very uncomfortable.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Mike Leach has signed a contract extension with Washington State through the 2023 season.
No news. I know everyone's going to say this is good news. I put very little stock into college coaching contracts. If and when Mike Leach decides to leave, he'll leave. If and when he gets a better offer that he wants to go take, this is not going to change
anything.
Well,
part of this may be increasing his buyout, so that could be changing some of this.
Could, but my guess is that when another college really wants somebody, if it's a good enough job, they end up paying for it. So maybe there's some slight good news in here, and I think he's obviously a great fit at Washington State, but I'm going to still say no news.
Yeah, I would say largely just another year on his deal is no news. What is good news for Washington State is Tracy Clay's got a 3-year deal.
The club yelling, Tracy Clay's, Tracy Clay's, Tracy Clay's.
What else is good news is the AD, Pat Chun, was able to put a deal together with Mike Leach and his agent and Tracy Clay's for 3 more years. So Pat Chun knows what moves the needle. He knows what is the engine that drives an athletic department. He's committed to two coaches that have done a phenomenal job over there.
Good news, bad news, no news.
NHL Seattle asked the state legislature to delay $80 million in sales tax payments.
I honestly don't know enough on this story to comment. I don't know why they're doing it or what that means, so I apologize.
Here. In the sense that the Mariners and Seahawks were afforded the same luxury.
Was it just right off the bat saying, hey, we don't have the money yet based on there's no gate yet?
Yeah, they're going to generate some revenue and pay these loans back with interest.
What is this? What sales tax? I guess I don't understand what the sales tax is. What sales tax could they possibly be generating?
Isn't it just that they've withheld it and now they have to pay it up?
From what? What are they buying?
Rich and rich people do
that. What are they buying? What are they buying that they need
property?
To spend
property?
They're buying the ability to gain interest on their own money before paying the taxes.
Well, I think it's a sales tax. I guess I honestly don't know about it. Let me go do some homework. Can I come back and do this again tomorrow?
Confounding news.
Sorry.
Stop hating rich people, Howdy. That's messed up.
Good news, bad news, no news.
I got to hate on rich people like that, Howdy.
Howdy's blue collar.
Saints coach Sean Payton may or may not have been wearing a t-shirt yesterday depicting Roger Goodell dressed as a clown with a red clown's nose.
Great news.
Yeah. I love Sean Payton. I don't.
I do.
I'm kind of done with him. And the fact that he buried Al Riveron in the league, I'm pretty confident, was asked not to disclose a private call, and he made it as public as possible.
I like it.
And it's a reason why he was suspended for a year from the league.
I like it all. Go Sean Payton. Fight the good fight. I'm with you, brother. Whatever you need, you can call on me, and I am there to defend you. Doug Gottlieb came on earlier and said, when have you ever heard of this happening? Well, never, but that doesn't mean it hasn't happened. It just means Sean Payton was the first to actually give us a little insight.
Sean Payton's an incredibly petty guy.
Thank you. And he should be in that situation. Everyone would be petty in that spot. Well, I don't blame him one bit.
I did like him saying that he ate ice cream for 3 days straight after the NFC championship game.
I don't blame him for that either.
Netflix, binge watch Netflix and ate ice cream.
You go. You go. I like it, Sean Payton.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Herm Edwards at Arizona State is going to make all three freshman quarterbacks available to the media throughout the spring.
Yeah, that's good news. They're going to be in the competition. Herm's doing some wild things, man. I was reading into some of this. I got to try to understand it further. He is starting spring ball next week. And his spring ball will be the month of February. That's it. Four practices a week in the month of February, totally self-contained, totally outside the norm of everybody else in college football. He's got his reasons behind it. He believes his team is young. Like those three freshman quarterbacks, he wants to get them just inundated right away into big-time college football. So good for you, Herm, outside the norm. Good news.
I love Herm. Men, great news. Text messages coming in here, 710-710. Salk, the sales tax are on construction materials purchase, and they wanted to, for the sales tax, construction materials, they're looking. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, then, yeah, they don't have any way of paying it back yet because they haven't essentially done the thing that is going to make
You don't think Bondo got that kind of coin?
I mean, I'm sure he does.
You think Bruckheimer's got that kind of coin?
I don't think they need I don't think they need to do something like this, and I can't tell you I particularly support it, but it also doesn't particularly bother me.
Father's howdy.
Confounding news.
Father's howdy an awful lot.
All right, there you go. Now we don't have to do that story again tomorrow.
Well, yeah, but that even leads to more questions.
Why?
So what? So, like, they go to buy a bunch of materials from some local supplier, and they're like, we've got this gold card that exempts us from tax.
Right.
So make sure you don't ring us up there.
Well, not forever.
Hey, how do you do that?
I don't know. I think when it's $80 million, you have a different level of bargaining power.
Yes, but just like business to business. I understand that they went to
B2B?
The government, but yeah, B2B.
You don't think this works B2B?
Yeah, just take this macro to micro. What's going on here?
I don't know.
The economic breakdown.
Can we say very specifically we are out of our element here and that none of us truly understand
Should we
this?
Dig deeper on this topic?
No, let's dig deeper on something else. Brock's got three subjects he does want to dig deeper into, and you know what? I'm up for all three of these conversations. You guys should be as well. It's next on Brock and Salk.